This is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. You've made the commitment.
You caught the vision.
You want your family to serve God.
But sometimes it's hard to put feet on that vision. Hey, Hal, do visions have feet?
Shh. How do you get from principle to practice?
What do you need to know about the issues affecting your family?
How do you apply God's Word in the 21st century?
Let's talk about it.
This is Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young.
All right, hello, this is Hal.
And this is Melanie.
Pardon the little fumble there, but we want to welcome you to this episode of Making Biblical Family Life Practical.
Tonight we're going to talk about water safety, which is something we've been thinking a lot about because we're on our annual writing retreat.
Yeah, that's right. You know, in Matthew chapter 14, we've got that wonderful story where Peter challenged Jesus and said, "If it's really you out there, command me to come walking to you on the water." And Jesus said, "Come on," so to speak. And, you know, Peter did walk on the water for some distance, but he eventually sank because his faith was low. Now, you know what? Peter was right to try to walk on the water. Jesus had commanded him. Jesus was right there. He had a direct revelation. Most of us don't have that. Most of us, when we encounter the water, we've got to use our common sense guided by experience, and we need to make sure that we're training our young people to be safe around it as well.
And yeah, that's something that's been on my heart a lot lately, Hal, because we spend a lot of time. Hal's family has a cabin on the lake in South Carolina, and we hide out there for several weeks every summer and try to get some work done, do some writing well, and have some fun with the children. But I was disturbed the other day, Hal, to find out that one of my Facebook friends nearly drowned at a water park.
Wow. And, you know, sometimes you think, how can an adult get into a situation like that? And yet, you know, I think I recall you telling me that friend had never learned to swim.
No, she had not learned to swim. Her children had not learned to swim. And they had rented a floaty and were out in a wave pool over her head.
Mm-hmm.
And when the float turned over, she nearly drowned before the lifeguard could get to her.
Wow.
You know, that just flipped me out. It just really, really upset me because, you know, I was raised that swimming is a life skill that you've got to learn.
I think it really is. And, you know, that was something my parents made a priority of. And let's talk about that for a minute. You know, I think that like everything else we teach our kids, sometimes there's a readiness issue. And I know my parents enrolled me in swim classes at the local YMCA when I was about, six. And I'll be honest, that was a miserable summer for me. I was a really scary kid, and just the challenge of putting my face in the water and not drowning myself, you know, which I was sure that I was going to do, that was hard. And you know what? Some of the other kids were not very kind, and they liked picking on the more sheepish kids like me. And so they really made that a very bad experience for me. But I know that when I was 7, the next summer, my parents let me just kind of play in the water and get used to it and more comfortable around it and, you know, learn the very basic things about how to float and the fact that I would float and not, you know, sink like a rock. So when I came back as an 8-year-old, I took to it right well and did, you know, learn to swim that year and learn to dive and do remarkable things like that. And so, you know, eventually I did get the things I needed to learn.
You know, my experience was very different, Hal. Mm. My mom signed me up for swim lessons. I don't know if it's a city pool or YMCA or something. But the teacher I had was really supportive.
Mm-hmm.
The teacher was very complimentary and praised us. I still remember her praising the way I pointed my toe, saying, you must take ballet or something, which I did. But, you know, she made me feel like I was competent. And even though I was a really scary kid, I was one of these kids who couldn't sleep in the dark, like, ever. You know, I was a really scary kid with a lot of fear. I wasn't afraid of the water because of this supportive teacher, and I took to it like a fish to water and swam all my life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so the way a child learns makes a big difference, and the readiness makes a big difference.
Yeah, and, you know, anybody who's spent any time around the water will tell you that being comfortable with it and having the being able to relax in the water, even in an emergency situation, will make the difference. You know, that people drown when they panic.
Yeah, so true.
And we see that as we teach our young people. We'll talk about the process we go through. You know, you can see it with them. The biggest hurdle at first is to get them just to relax and let the water support them. And they stiffen up, they panic, they have that wave of fear, and of course then, naturally they do start to sink.
Well, we say relax around the water, it's kind of a balance, mm-hmm. because you don't want them to be so relaxed around the water they don't take it seriously enough. Like that mom who took her children out over her head on a float when none of them could swim, they were too relaxed around the water.
Well, they were lackadaisical.
Yeah, they didn't realize the danger. And so, we have some basic rules in our family. And one of the rules in our family is that if we're, for example, if we're at the lake house, at the at the cabin, you don't go out, you don't leave the deck, you don't go outside unless you are wearing a life jacket, unless you pass my swim test.
Yep, and same kind of rule applies when we go to the beach. You do not set foot on the beach unless you've got on a life jacket, something that'll support you in the water until you've proven that you can do it.
Yeah, and I don't mean can swim a little bit. I mean till you're a confident swimmer.
Right.
And, so that's a safety issue for me because you hear about little kids drowning. It's terrifying.
You know, I read a story a few years ago about it seemed like it was a church picnic that was at a riverside, and I cannot remember exactly where it was, but the gist of the story was the kids were playing in the water at the edge of the river, and one of them got in trouble, and one of the parents waded out into the river to try to rescue them, and they got into trouble, and the whole thing snowballed until there were several that drowned, both parents and children. And it turns out that nobody in this whole group of families, not a single one, was able to swim. And, that just astounded me, but realizing, that we were blessed that we grew up in small towns and there were low-cost alternatives that allowed us to use swimming pools and to get swimming lessons without, having to be members of a country club or something.
Right.
But I know that in a lot of places it's harder for families to get some kind of professional help like that.
It really is. And sometimes people don't have much ways to swim. They don't have a pool. Mm-hmm. They don't have a place to a place that they can go cheaply.
Mm-hmm.
But I think your children still need to know how to swim because at some point in their life, they're going to be at a picnic at the river. They're going to go to a lake with friends.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not safe.
Right.
And so let's talk about some inexpensive ways that you can get your children water safe. Mm-hmm. First of all, I think it's really important to introduce your young children to the water in a non-scary way. What we do is with life jackets, we get them out in the water with us.
Mm-hmm.
We show them how to float in their backs.
Mm-hmm.
We play with them in the water. We show them that, it's fun to be in the water with the life jacket on.
Mm-hmm.
And then in controlled circumstances, when we're right there, our hands are on taking the life jacket off and showing them how to float, how to hold their breath, how to put their face in the water,
mm-hmm.
so that they have a comfort level of knowing how to do those things.
Right. Yeah.
Now, we did mm-hmm. swim lessons with our oldest four children.
And we did them in a variety of places. I know we had sometimes that we took the kids to a public pool.
Yeah.
We had kids that took lessons from individuals in a private backyard pool.
Yes.
It just whatever opportunity presented that particular summer.
And it's really not that expensive. It's mm-hmm. worthwhile. If you have older children, we're going to be talking about water safety for older kids and boating and all that in a little while, so hang on with us, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But for the younger children, it's not that expensive to get lessons. We did lessons with our first four, but after watching I'm a really good swimmer myself, and after mm-hmm. watching four different kids take lessons, we've taught the younger four ourselves
mm-hmm.
How to swim. And a good swimmer can do that if they know some basic techniques about teaching swimming.
Mm-hmm.
Our rule, though, is you have to, I told you have to wear the life jacket till you can pass my swim test. You're probably wondering, what's my swim test?
Well, okay. Now, picture this. The place that we go for our annual vacation has just a little dock out here. It's on a quiet cove, a big lake. And You know, there's not a lot of wave action or anything. A little more than a pond, but it's, you know, it's not like ocean surf. And so we've got a dock that sticks out into the water, what, about 60 feet maybe, you think?
Yeah.
Just an estimate.
Yeah, and my concern was, what happens if they fall off the dock?
Yes.
How can I keep them safe until they can get back in the shore?
Right.
What if they're on a boat and they fall out or the boat tips over? How can we keep them safe?
Well, the first thing is to keep them from just sinking straight to the bottom right immediately. So you got to teach them how to float and how to tread water.
Yeah, they have to be able to float on their face with their face in the water for 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And they can lift up and get a breath if they need to.
Right.
They have to be able to float on their back for 10 minutes.
Yep.
Now, that sounds like a long time. But in 10 minutes, they're likely to be able to get some help, and it's really quite doable.
Yeah.
They also have to be able to tread water for 10 minutes.
You know, that's, I remember very much that was part of the deep end training that we did at the YMCA. I remember the treading water and the drown proofing and all that kind of stuff that we did too. So that would say, you know, if you fell out, at least you know how to keep yourself from struggling and going under, just to relax and to let the water hold you up and cooperate with you.
And that makes sure that you're able to relax in water, because you can't float on your back for 10 minutes unless you can calm down and relax.
Right.
And then we require them to be able to swim a good long distance. How long did the boys say it was from one dock to the next? 80 yards?
I don't think it was that far. I think it's more like 80 feet.
I don't know.
But anyway, we'll say 100 feet. We'll just round it and say 100 feet.
But they have to be able to swim a good long distance, because I want them to be able to fall in and get to shore.
Right.
Okay. And so our seventh child passed her swim test the other day. And it was so hard. She was so scared about swimming that long distance. But, you know, her fear made it much harder because she had to take a lot more breaths because she was breathing more rapidly. And, you know, it was much harder for her than if she was able to be calmer. But she passed it.
Yeah.
And so I recommend that you have some rules for your children like that to keep them safe, that, you know, you can't be around the water unless you're wearing a life jacket or you're safe in the water.
And you know what? If you start early, they don't argue that much, because that's the way it always is.
No, they hate the life jacket.
Well, they hate the life jacket.
And they complain and whine about that. But I say, okay, so pass your swim test.
Yeah.
And so when I go in the water with them, my younger ones that haven't passed the swim test are begging. Mama, would you teach me to swim? Would you help me? Could you help me with my floating? Would you help me with my swimming?
Yeah.
Because they want to get out of that life jacket.
A little 5-year-old was like, as soon as we got to the lake, Daddy, will you help me float? Will you teach me to float?
Yeah.
Well, okay. When we get out in the water, we'll work on this. So she's got a ways to go still.
Yeah.
But
have some standards for your family that involve safety. And you know what? If you don't swim, call around and find a friend or someone who can give you private lessons and teach you to swim.
Or ask at your church. Ask if there's any parents there who you know, have a pool maybe, or wouldn't mind meeting you at a lake or someplace and teach your kids the basics of that. You know, teach you is a good thing for you to learn, too.
I think it's really important parents learn, because your fear will pass down to your children.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing about it does not take long to teach someone to be safe in the water.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not hard.
Right. Well, now, one thing I do want to mention here, we have to talk about this some, is that you got to be sure to maintain, if you will, social discipline in the water.
Yeah.
Okay, you've got to put some ground rules out there so the older children know not to splash the younger ones, not to, you know, not to duck one another or to play boisterously around new swimmers or not quite swimmers.
Well, and things that are okay in a pool, like ducking, are okay in a lake where it could force water up your nose that could cause an infection.
Yeah.
So we have different rules in a pool than we do in the lake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the lake, you've got to be a lot more careful about. And you don't jump around unless you're holding your nose. You don't want that water forced up your nose.
Mm-hmm.
And so be aware of that.
Yep.
And, hell, it's about time for a break.
I think it is time for a break. Let me drop a little word in here for our book, Raising Real Men, because we talk in that book, we talk about some of the things, the challenges of raising young men to be courageous and adventurous and even bold and you have to do it in a wise, prudent manner. Okay, let's drop off for a station break here from Great Waters Press.
And when we come back, we'll talk about letting them have adventures in the water.
It's not always easy having sons. Teenage boys put away a startling amount of groceries. Younger boys can be downright destructive. They're noisy, unconcerned with hygiene, and the dog has a longer attention span, or so it seems some days. If these are God's chosen gifts to us, and we believe that they are, then why does it seem so hard? How can we prepare these boys to serve God when we can barely make it through the day? Isn't there a better way? The answer is yes. Raising Real Men, Surviving, Teaching, and Appreciating Boys by Hal and Melanie Young is a practical, award-winning guide to equipping the hearts and minds of boys without breaking or losing your own. John Rosemond says, "This is just what the doctor ordered for parents who want to raise capable Christian men of character." Raising Real Men by Hal and Melanie Young. Visit it on the web at raisingrealmen.com. Brought to you by Great Waters Press.
Well, hello. Welcome back to Making Biblical Family Life Practical.
I'm Melanie.
And I'm Hal. And we are talking about water safety, fun and safety, and audacity and prudence all at once during the summer as we are out at the lake and the ocean and the riverside.
Now, the first half of the session, we talked about what about those kids who can't swim?
Mm-hmm.
How do you keep them safe? How do you teach them to swim? How do you get them to the point that they're really safe in the water?
Right.
But then there's a step after that.
Well, there's the big kids. How do you manage their sense of boldness and audacity once they've learned how to swim somewhat? And
because as soon as ours learned how to be comfortable in the water, learned how to swim, passed the test that we make them go through to make sure they can take off their life jackets in the lake.
Right.
Then they wanted to go boating and kayaking and do some competitive swimming.
Yeah.
They stretched me. I know. I remember the first time.
Yeah.
One of ours wanted to take the kayak out of my sight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I freaked out. I was so worried about it, and yet I knew he was safe.
Mm-hmm.
I had required him to flip himself over in the kayak, turn it over, and climb back in
mm-hmm.
there near our dock.
Demonstrate you could recover from an accident.
Yeah, I knew he knew how to recover. I knew what he needed, what he did in an emergency. Now, one thing is we always require, if you're in a boat, if you're away from the dock, you have to have a life jacket on, no matter what.
Yeah, that's right. That's just good rule to maintain for everybody.
And that's even if you're a terrific swimmer. Because if something happens, if your boat tips because of the wake of a bigger boat, because let me tell you, there are some nuts out there on the water, just like there are on the roads.
There really are. We watch them out there, and we kind of wonder sometimes what people are thinking, because they'll come by with their personal watercraft, their jet skis, or their skiing boats, and they're too close to docks, and they're cutting really sharp curves there in the middle of our little cove. And, you know, those poor kids out there on a float at the end of the ski line are just like cracking a whip. And you think, Dad, are you thinking at all?
Yeah.
Are you considering what could happen here? But, you know, you do have to. My mother always used to say when we started driving, she'd say, "I'm not worried about you, but I want you to watch out for the other fool." Okay.
And so, you know, we require them to wear life jackets, even though all our guys are really good swimmers, because if their boat turns over, if they're in an accident or something, they can get hit on the head and be unconscious.
Well, or just the surprise, just being thrown in unexpectedly is going to put you at a disadvantage. Well, you know, we do recognize, and we tell people, excuse me, it's in our book, Raising Real Men, and as we talk about you know, the importance of raising boys to be courageous and adventurous and willing to step out. You do
because
have to give them.
We want them to be bold and adventurous as adults.
Right.
We want them to be adventurous enough to share the gospel, even when there's risk involved. We want them adventurous enough to do whatever God's called them to do.
To start a business or to move to a new town or whatever, you know, whatever God calls them into.
Well, unfortunately, adventurousness in boys sometimes looks like recklessness.
Yeah. So how do you manage these two? Well, we got kind of called up today. Two of our older sons that are with us said, "Hey, we want to swim across the cove." Nobody had done that in the family. And the cove is not really wide. It's about 700 feet across, really. But nobody had swum across that open area before. And we said, okay,
Well, if you want to do that, we know that they can swim that distance because they swim laps back and forth. We said, all right, but you need to have a chase boat with you. Let's send one of your brothers with the boat and some life jackets. So if you get a cramp or get into trouble or tire out or something, he can throw you afloat and you won't have a problem. And they were good with that. They were all right with that. And so they started out under cloudy skies. They got about two-thirds of the way across, and the bottom fell out. It just rained cats and dogs, and they got hammered by this rain for, you know, not only the last bit of the swim, but as they made up their mind to come on back, they got rained on all the way across.
And then it started thundering and lightning, yeah. And, you know, they were racing to get back because, you know, there's nothing else on the water today.
Yeah.
So they were in a pretty dangerous position. But, yeah, the cool – and that was really hard for me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I prayed pretty hard watching them way over there. But the cool thing about it is, you know, the next step, they want to swim across to one of the islands in the main lake.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, you know, if we were going to an island, what would we do if we got trapped over there? If a storm came up, we shouldn't swim back. What should we do?
Yeah. And so they actually took that as a learning experience. We didn't really even have to push it. They were saying, well, okay, if we got stuck over there for several hours, what would we want with us? You know, we want somebody to in the boat to have some water or some protein bars or something to, you know, to kind of hold them over for a little while until things cleared up.
Maybe a tarp, some shelter.
Yeah, I mean, that's good planning, good prudent thought. So, you know, that I felt like was a good experience all around. And so,
you know, what we try to do is encourage them to have adventures. You know, mm-hmm. we've had so much fun. One of the activities we've done for probably 3 or 4 years now
mm-hmm.
is we've built a boat every summer.
Right. And our first boat, we built a little rowboat. It's actually, the plan is called a one-sheet skiff. It's a small rowboat that's built out of a single sheet of plywood. And the lines are beautiful. It's a perfectly proportioned little boat. It holds about 250 pounds. And, you know, it's very shallow draft. I mean, the sides are only about 9 inches high, so it's not something that you want to really take out in the ocean, that's for sure. But it's perfect for one of the boys exploring around. He just uses a kayak paddle to push it. And we've built two of those, and we're working on a two-sheet model right now that's actually been going on for a couple of years. We've been building it kind of gradually.
Well, it's seaworthy. They took it today.
Yeah.
But now the next plan is to step a mast.
They want to put a sail on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, that's been an interesting activity because we never really thought about ordinary people building a boat. A boat was something that you bought. You know, got it on Craigslist or from a yard sale or you went to a dealer.
But our boys wanted to explore. They wanted to get out of our little cove. You can see 2 or 3 islands. Out in the big lake from our little cove, and they wanted to get out there and explore those islands, and we just could not afford. We looked for several years for canoes and things like that. We couldn't afford anything we could find.
Yeah, and so finally we got inspired to try and build one and found that plan, and you can build one of these boats for less than $75. You know, you can't beat that.
No.
So we've become boat builders of sorts, and again, it's one of those things that we've encouraged our guys to think about because, say, you've got the skills or you can acquire the skills to do all kinds of things that you may not have even thought of yet.
And so if you want to do something, mm-hmm. if you want to have an adventure and you don't have the means, find a way to do it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, find a way to put it together. Can you work harder? Can you build it yourself? Can mm-hmm. you find a way to make it happen? And that's been a great thing for our guys, I think.
Yes.
It's taught them a lot of independence, a lot of responsibility. And, you know, we have had so much fun. Everybody getting in. You know, now we have 2 little boats and the bigger boat and the kayak. And, you know, they'll go out all together and explore the islands around in the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't remember doing things like that as a kid.
Well, we just didn't have the equipment or the opportunity.
And you know, I guess... Yeah, you know, it never occurred to my parents, I think, to let us go that far, you know, to let us really go out and do it, go adventuring.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's something that I think it's been good for our boys that we've done.
Well, I'll tell you what, before, as we wrap things up, we got about 7 minutes to go here. I want to talk about something. I had a very interesting experience this summer, and it ties in with this. I nearly drowned in the desert.
Yep.
This is really, really peculiar. But let me tell you what happened. I rolled over on, we were camping in the Arizona desert, and I rolled over in the middle of the night and got a drink of water. I had a water bottle there beside my air mattress, and I rolled over and I didn't sit up. I just thought, well, I'll just lie here and I just drink it sideways or whatever, you know, things you do when you're sleepy in the middle of the night. Well, I got a good drink of water and I choked a little bit on it, and it didn't really think about it much, but I had a hard time getting comfortable to settle down. And I mean, really almost like chest pains. And I finally got up and walked around a little bit. And this is in the middle of the night. I ended up sitting up in the front seat of the van the rest of the evening. And come to find out, what I had experienced was a near drowning, a circumstance they call dry drowning.
And that's something you need to watch for with your younger children, especially.
Yes.
Because, you know, when they're playing and, you know, sometimes when they're learning to swim, they sniff water up their noses, mm-hmm. and they choke some, or if they're ducking each other, that can happen. And what happens is they don't drown when they're in the water, but later when they lie down, the water that they've got in their lungs settles out and it can keep them from breathing well. Mm-hmm. And some of the symptoms of that are extreme fatigue, more fatigue than would be normal for the activity that they've done,
mm-hmm.
difficulty breathing, anxiety, you know. And so if you see those things happening in your children, mm-hmm. after they've been in the water, especially after they've had a choking event in the water, you need to take them to a doctor right away.
Yes.
It's very dangerous.
Right.
And
you know, likewise, we read an article, I think it was last year, and we shared it around a great deal. Someone who works in water safety was pointing out that we have this mental picture of what a drowning in process looks like.
We picture they're waving their arms, they're yelling, "Help, help, I'm drowning."
Yep. And sputtering and choking and all of this display like you see in the movies.
But in reality, drowning is a silent, quiet event.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens is when someone is really drowning, when they can't get enough air, then their brain shuts down everything but the desperate drive to get air. So they can't speak, they can't yell, they can't wave their arms. What they do is they just press down at the water, trying desperately to lift their mouths up to get a breath, but they're going lower and lower in the water.
Okay.
And so when, you know, you need to keep a life jacket on anybody who can't swim, first of all.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's somebody who can't swim has no business being in the water unless someone is actively with them teaching them without a life jacket.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes even kids who can swim will drown because they hurt themselves or they've gotten too tired. It happened to a young man on our boys' football team, a teenager. Last mm-hmm. year, he and his friend were having a race. The friend looked back and he was gone.
Wow.
And so, you know, you need to make sure that you're aware that drowning is silent. And if you see someone whose arms are out mm-hmm. and whose mouth is just barely above the water and they're silent and they're just staring, you need to get in the water and help them right away.
Get some help out to them. A life jacket, a rope. You know, somebody with a boat or a float or something. Yeah.
And sometimes at that point, they're not even able to help themselves. So you may need to go in and grab them.
That's right. So that's good to know. It's sobering. But, you know, when you know these things, when you know what could happen and what it looks like, you know, just like the films that they give you to talk about how to get out of an undertow or a rip current, you know, at the beach, those kind of things. If you know what's there and you know that there's a way out of it, then you can either help yourself or you can help somebody else that's in trouble.
You know, I love being in the water. I grew up next to a pool. And
uh-huh.
I love being in the water, love swimming. All our children love swimming. We love water sports. But I think the key to water safety mm-hmm. is knowing each person in your family's abilities and matching the activities to their abilities.
That's right.
You know, because, you know, that way no one goes beyond what they're able to do and mm-hmm. is endangered. But they're able to do all that they're able to do and can have fun.
That sounds good. Well, look, We appreciate you joining us at this special summer edition of Making Biblical Family Life Practical. We've got another summer edition planned for next week. We're going to be talking about summer movies. Now, we're not going to do reviews. We're not going to tell you which ones are good or bad. But we're going to be talking about watching movies with your eyes and your mind open.
And how to teach your children to do the same.
How to be discerning users of media, not people that avoid the media, not people that engulf everything without question, but rather to look at it and examine it through those spiritual lenses so that you can get the benefit of it and avoid the traps.
Excellent. We will see you next week.
Mm-hmm.
Have fun in the water this week.
Yep.
Listen, if you can't swim and your children can't swim, get out there and find somebody to teach you this week. Okay?
Right.
Y'all have fun. Have a great week. We'll see you next Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern on Making Biblical Family Life Practical. I'm Melanie.
And I'm Hal. Thanks for joining us.
Bye, folks.
You've been listening to Making Biblical Family Life Practical with Hal and Melanie Young. If you found this program interesting, challenging, and encouraging, why not join us on the web at halandmelanie.com. That's HALANDMELANIE.com, or follow us on social media. You can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Hal and Melanie or Facebook.com/Raising Real Men. This program is a production of the Ultimate Homeschool Radio Network. Join us next week when we'll be back to talk about making biblical family life practical. Until then, thank you and God bless you for listening.